Hi, everybody. This is Kel Weinhold from The Professor's Inn. Before we get started on today's podcast, I wanted to thank our sponsors. And our sponsors are you, or people like you. So if you are already a sponsor of The Professor's Inn for $3.99 a month, we thank you. You make it possible for us to keep doing this and to pay people to help us do it. And if you are not yet a sponsor and you would like to be, and you'd like to be part of our background conversation or give us suggestions and questions, head on over to bit.ly/ourpod and join. That's bit.ly/OURPOD. And now we are on to today's episode.
Indeed. And I am Dr. Karen Kelski of The Professor's Inn. And as always, we're very glad that you're here with us. And today we are going to be talking about how to promote yourself in a variety of ways and why you should do it and how you should do it.
I am really excited about this topic, and I want to say that we're going to use some words that might distress you. We're going to use words like marketing yourself and brand. So if you need to get yourself collected before we go forward, this is the time. Just take a deep breath, settle in. We're going to talk about why you actually deserve to raise your flag.
This is true. And indeed, in academia, it's considered somehow undignified or improper to market yourself or to do things like that we call things like self-promotion or networking or anything like that. But you know, if you know The Professor's Inn, you know that we really object to the elitism that is implicit in those kinds of judgments and the ways that those kinds of judgments hold academia as somehow separate and some kind of special quasi-religious space, separate from the rest of the economy, and the different rules apply to academics that don't apply to others. And basically, the thing is grad school's a job, and then you go on the job market, you look for a job, and what you're doing is work. It's labor. Even when you get on the tenure track, it's a job, it's labor. And there are things that you can do to make your work experience better and make your career progression better. And all of those do hinge on making sure people know who you are. I mean, academia is not an exception to this rule. If people don't know who you are, they aren't going to be able to hire you or invite you to be part of their panel or their collection or their conference. And there are going to be fewer, you're going to experience fewer opportunities to move forward in your career.
Sometimes I feel like the not being on a, you know, not wanting to have a website, not being on Twitter. I can understand not being on Twitter, but not wanting to have sort of a social media presence, not being on LinkedIn, that a bunch of those are sort of this last gasp of it. This isn't, we're separate from capitalism.
Yeah, we're separate special, from special people who don't have to be on that unseemly rat race.
Right. And that it's, anyway, I
hamster
just think
wheel,
you know, hamster wheel. There's a classism in it. There's a like a better, more pure job than those other jobs. So, I guess the thing I would say is take a look and examine that, as examine your reactions to what we say today. Here, I'm going to offer you that opportunity as we are talking about this. Examine your reaction and see. Ask yourself. What is the story I believe that is causing me to react negatively?
Yeah. So, you know, self-promotion can take different forms. I mean, on the one hand, there's the simple self-promotion of doing academic work in general. And that includes, say, getting, you know, writing your dissertation and being impacted by certain scholars whose work was really transformative for you, reaching out to those scholars and telling them, you know, your work has been transformative for me, and I'd like for you to read this, to have a copy of this chapter of my dissertation. If you have a chance to read it and comment, I'd be incredibly grateful. But even if not, you know, I just want to share my work with you because I have valued your work so intensely. And, you know, this is kind of networking. This is a kind of networking and a kind of outreach that is part of the academic career. And then if you do actually get an article published, It's totally kosher to send that article to various people and say, your work's been really meaningful to me, and I want you to know, I want you to see what I just had an article published. Here it is.
Well, so you're already sort of starting on strategies. So as the resident communication scholar, I'm going to back us up a little bit. And that those are, well, they're actually tactics. Mm. They're tactics that you're doing, you're applying to accomplish something. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that you have to identify yourself is what's the strategy you're hoping to accomplish, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're an individual, if you are if you're an actor, if you're an attorney, if you're something that where you need people's attention on you, you have a goal in mind. And so I think that people get really uncomfortable with the idea of self-promotion because they really don't understand what am I trying to accomplish mm-hmm. with this? And it's not just pay attention to me. Mm-hmm. So think about your career, right? So think about what's the strategy you're applying right now. And that's really wherever you are in your career. Mm-hmm. So you're starting in graduate school. I like to, let's say we set the marker. By the time I finish graduate school, I would like to have interacted with X number of people in my field, have a well-developed website, and submitted X.
I see what you're saying.
So you have to know, you have to sort of look at it as a goal.
I mean, you're right. I never think like that. I just spastically sort of think about, you know, reactively think about, I think I want this to do this thing, so therefore I'll do it now.
Right, and we've had a 10-year professors in conversation where I say, could we get a strategy? Right,
exactly.
Can we talk about what we want to do? Right. And why? We're going to do this. I say, that's
today.
Great.
Right.
How does that fit into the larger plan?
Yes. Well,
so I just really want to challenge people
agree.
To do that.
Like,
what are you trying? Because you're not going to buy into it if it's just, I mean, I'm just going to say, the Academy is built on external critique and judgment. If you have a perception that people are going to critique or judge you for sort of laying out your plan or starting these various things, if you don't have a known accepted strategy for yourself, you're going to be really susceptible
to somebody those judgments
coming and
when
saying,
they come.
Oh, so you sent your article to those people? Ugh. And you're just going to be like,
I would never do that.
Of course, and I did, because here's my plan.
Because here's why. Right. So you're right. You
your
should
internal
have a
plan.
You should have an internal plan for what you want to accomplish. And so talking about some of the motivations that you might speak to you is the idea that you can build a scholarly community so that your work will be better if it's in dialogue with others. That's one. Another is that you want to control your digital profile.
Right.
And so rather than leaving Google to curate your profile for you, you can create a website and then have all the stuff on there that you want to be part of what people see when they say, oh, I heard this person talk at a conference. I'm curious to know more about them. Type in your name and your website comes up, which then is your chance to say, this is what I want you to know about me. That's another motivation.
And if you put your name in Google right now, for many of you, probably what you're going to see first is your university affiliation. Mm-hmm. If you put your full name plus PhD, likely it's going to say, you know, PhD candidate at Berkeley or assistant professor at Middlebury or whatever it is. And so even then, the university is controlling the narrative because those tend to have templates that need to be filled out. So. And they tend to be very academic or nothing and really confusing because people can't find out more about you. So you're absolutely right. You want to be in charge of the narrative about you. I think the other thing that I just want to say on the side about that is that sort of goal setting tends to activate people's perception of people being ambitious.
Oh, yeah, God forbid.
And God forbid you should be ambitious. And if my saying to you, wow, you're really ambitious, causes a little one of those reactions that I was talking about, take a look at what you've attached to ambitious. Mm-hmm. What does that mean for you? Does
Especially
it mean that you stomp over other people? That's not what I'm talking about. Yeah, I think ambition is gendered.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, no, not really. Oh, no. No, that's not what I'm. Well, if your instinct is to say, oh, no, I'm not. Well, why? There's nothing wrong with being ambitious. And honestly, if you're here and you're in this enterprise and you're doing a PhD and you're writing scholarship and you're applying for grants and going to conferences and putting your ideas out there, and you are, like most of you out there, hoping against hope to get that academic job, then ambition is a fuel of that journey.
Well, and I would argue right now that whether you're trying to get a job in the academy or out of the academy, it's a challenge. And the more places you can put yourself and control your narrative about yourself, the mm-hmm. better off you're going to be, whether you're trying to get a tenure track job absolutely. Or you're trying to work for a think tank.
Yeah.
And I think we have to be careful of what we think ambition is. Mm-hmm. What, like, this idea that you have to kill someone mm-hmm. to be ambitious is not true. Yeah.
I often, in my talks I give about leaving the academy, I talk about networking and how it's such a dirty word in the academy because there are a couple reasons. One is because we're a little bit of a self-selected population. We're people who are, a lot of us are wallflowers and nerds and socially awkward, and that's why we went into the academy, because we want to be in our lab or in the archives or the library and left alone. I totally get that. That's not really what I'm talking about. So we don't like networking because it's terrifying. I do get that. But the other is that it's really exploitative and instrumentalizing, that basically you're using other people to get ahead. And I take time in all of my talks to say that's not what networking is. Networking is meeting other people, making an effort to meet other people. And yeah, okay, maybe that's a stretch for you, but you can learn to do it. And then communicating who you are and what you do and what your goals are. And then also listening to who they are, what they do and what their goals are. And then exploring places where those might intersect. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing untoward about it. There's nothing slimy or sleazy about it. It's just a certain kind of targeted communication.
Mm-hmm. So glad that you mentioned communication. So let's just back up a step and flip what you just said to the first thing to do, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of building your profile, building your brand, building whatever, networking is the first place to begin to just let people, you know, be in conversation with people. Mm-hmm. So then later when you get in touch with them, mm-hmm. they know who you are.
Right.
Right. So that, of course, will work better once we get to go back to in-person mm-hmm. things. But also, you know, you can be on a Zoom meeting with someone speaking and write and follow up to them and say, I was on your talk mm-hmm. yesterday. I really appreciate X. This has influenced my work in these ways. Well, what I was going to say is then I think this idea that you were talking about beginning to share your work, I was trying to look at the narrative arc of building your brand instead of just popping around to different tactics.
Absolutely.
But that's what we do. So let's just pop around.
Yeah.
But let me just say, start off with tentatively getting to know people and networking. If you think about that as just sort of, you know, you just know who people are. They've seen your name. You've seen their mm-hmm. name. It doesn't have to be
that's all it has to be.
That's all it is. It's not like, hi, I met you and I need to know what you can do for me.
Right. Or, you're my new advisor, quasi-advisor.
My new best friend.
I'm going to now like harass you once a week, every week for the next 10 years to give me stuff and help me. Right. That's not what we're talking about.
So just a quick aside, one of my good friends is academic. She works at a university in STEM work, and she's someone who works for her who has a small kid who she calls her new best friend because every time this the 6-year-old super sciencey nerdy girl comes, she's just like, Dr. Kathy, you know, and so Kathy always says, oh, my new best friend came to visit today, because she's just like, I want to know everything you know, which I think is the delight we should come to people with.
Right.
But we have to remember we might be 20, 30, 40 years old, and that kind of like be my new best friend mm-hmm. does not mean it can't come with that kind of joy and interest in what's going on.
Absolutely. So, well, the story I want to tell mm-hmm. is so I had the opportunity to do a TEDx talk, and when the talk was actually officially presented, which it had to be pre-recorded because of COVID from my couch, but then we all came together. There were four of us on an evening, and what they did is they scheduled a virtual conference for the four talks, but it also had networking time, socializing time before, in the middle, and at the end. And they used this digital interface called Bramble, where we all had little avatars, and then they had a fake conference room with plants and chairs and tables and little coffee mugs. And we were using our arrow keys, we were wandering around. But the thing about these, and Bramble's not the only one, I've used another, is that as your little avatar approaches other avatars, you pop up on screen your video and your audio pops up so you can then see each other and you can talk live in person. And then as you walk away, your avatar walks away, you disappear. So it's really kind of fun. Anyway, the point I'm trying to say is that I, in the process of that conference and using the avatar platform, I met the other folks who were presenting. I listened to their talks. They listened to my talk. The minute that it was over, my mind was blown by one of the talks. The minute the event was over, I got onto Twitter. I looked her up. I found her. She's active on Twitter. She accepts DMs, so I immediately DM'd her and said, I loved your talk. It was the highlight of the evening. Would you like to be on our podcast? And she said, oh my gosh, I would love to. And now we're in a dialogue about how she's going to be a guest on the podcast. She's a grad student. So, you know, every step of that was networking. And I will tell you, I was meaning to tell you this, that there were different kinds of avatars. Some of them had big bright eyes and big smiles, and others were these sad little creatures that were staring at their feet. I, of course, chose the sad creature staring at its feet. And I basically did stand in the corner of the digital conference room for like 10 minutes before I was like, damn it, Karen, you just have to. Like, just as if I was at a real conference, hiding in the corner of the hotel lobby, there I was. So anyway, I went over and socialized with people. But the point is that meeting people, seeing what they did, using whatever resources are available under COVID, these are digital resources, following up and making a plan, these are all parts of networking. And they're all just based, for me, on just sheer enthusiasm. Excitement. Right. I loved what you had to say. I want to hear more of it. I want to invite you into my orbit.
Exactly. And so that's really the place to start, is to start. And like you said, it sounds sort of instrumentalizing, but I don't think it is, because I think it helps you build that sense of community.
Absolutely.
Of saying, I want to be in conversation with these people about the same interests, mm-hmm. right? So then, you know, you get to this idea of, okay, now I'm going to start doing work, which means I'm interacting with your actual work. I'm interacting with your writing. And that idea that you're going to send your work to people, or just let them know, you know, this work that you did on this was instrumental in this chapter that I wrote, and I wanted to thank you. Those kinds of things are true. You're not like randomly scouring the library shelves to be like, oh, that person I know can find their email address, I'll write to them. It's mm-hmm. in the process of your work. Mm-hmm. You begin a scholarly conversation, and you can carry that conversation on by email, mm-hmm. by Twitter, by whatever means. The key is, if you're junior in your career, or no matter where you are in your career, to not base doing that on the on whether you get a response, mm-hmm. on whether someone writes back and says, thank you for telling me that, because it doesn't, their answer is not really relevant, or their failure to answer is not an indicator of you having done something wrong.
That's true.
It's an indicator of the state of the academy.
Yeah.
I mean, I work with
people.
And
the state
of
humans under COVID as well right now. But yeah,
well, that's what overwork I meant. That was exhaustion. The subtext of that, like the academy under COVID. Mm-hmm. I mean, I send people emails that they want.
Mm-hmm. And they still don't respond.
They still don't respond. And I'm like, right. Did you get that email? Oh, I didn't even see it.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so, and those are, they're waiting for that email.
Right.
So really just keeping in mind that not sort of fall into that insecure baby bird waiting mm-hmm. to be fed, but instead, look, I'm just telling you because I want to tell you. Mm-hmm. I'm not telling you because I hope someday you're going to help me get a job. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you because I'm part of a community and I want to be in that community. Mm-hmm. So those two places are great places to start, that don't have to feel like you're building your brand, but
right.
they can be like, I'm getting used to this idea that I'm in conversation with the mm-hmm. field. You can call it networking. You can call it, you know, community building. You can call it just being nice and mm-hmm. sharing your work or your experience or your appreciation, I guess, yeah. is the word I was looking for.
Well, let me actually offer it's almost a slightly more programmatic way uh-huh. of saying what you just said. In my classic, highly specific, you know, right. literal way that I think. On social media, and I think of social media as Twitter, although Facebook is as well, and LinkedIn. But on Twitter, I'm often asked, what's a good way of using Twitter for people who don't know it? And the advice that I always give is derived from advice I read long, long ago, and I don't know the source. But basically that you divide your content into thirds. And a third of it is something that you recently accomplished, something, a third of it is responding to something someone else posted or accomplished or achieved, some content that someone else posted. And then the third of it is promoting a third party thing. It's the content that you just want the world to know about. Like, oh, so in other words, I did a thing. Oh, cool. You did a thing. Oh, look, those other people did a thing. Mm-hmm. And if you divide it in the, and if you keep those thirds in mind, you are using it well because you aren't just promoting yourself all the time, which is very alienating, but you are engaging with others who want to be engaged with, and you're enriching the field at large by bringing content forward that others might not have had the chance to see. And in that way, people are like, wow, she's pretty interesting. She's pretty cool. I want to follow her. And you begin to organically grow connections.
And I think at the graduate school level and beyond, I think there are Twitter groups that you can be in conversation with. So I think academic chat and academic Twitter and academic chatterer.
Mm-hmm. And the hashtags.
The hashtags, right? All of those are a place where, because I want to be careful here when I guess I would qualify this, like tell somebody something that you've done. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to get into that, like it's only worth mentioning if I got an article published in the number one journal. And that becomes a very tiresome. If like, I got it, look, my new article's out, look, my new article's out, look, my new article's out.
When I know people like that.
Mm-hmm, when some days the, oh my gosh, I finally got these results run, or, I went home from the lab early and took a walk.
I'm glad you did. Absolutely. Because it could be just like, I got a grant submitted.
Right.
Didn't mean I got the grant awarded.
Right.
But, you know, all of these things are part of.
And I'd also love to see things on Twitter. And I know academic chatter, the academic chatter folks retweet stuff like this, but when someone says, hey, I'm going to be applying for the X grant, does anybody have any experience doing that? Mm-hmm. That's networking.
It is networking.
That's that's the reaching out and mm-hmm. asking for experience. And mm-hmm. it's a lighter touch than, and it allows you to then be in touch with someone who may give you a copy of a grant. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this stuff is self-promotion, but it's not blatant, just like, I'm so cool. And I want people to understand that that's not what we're talking about. We're
absolutely
not talking about like, I'm so great, I'm so great, I'm so great.
Right.
Where it's like, I'm operating in this system. Mm-hmm. This is these are the things I'm doing. These are the questions I have.
Right. So it's questions.
Right.
It's a whole range. It's the range of humanity. Some things you know, some things you wonder about, some things you have to ask about.
Right.
Some things you just want to share. Sometimes you just want to comment. You want to say, as a sociologist, this new Biden policy really annoys me because,
right.
And that's some of what I mean when I said your own content. I didn't just mean I did a thing, but it's like as a scholar of X, I have an observation to make about some topical issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then I think we can get into. So if you start to think about who you are, what you do, who you're interacting with, I think that next stage of what's your your website going to look like
mm-hmm.
becomes an easier thing to imagine as you, this is the milieu I operate in. These are mm-hmm. the things I think about. These are the people I talk to. Because then you're going to be making a website that's in conversation with that has the multiple layers of your experience in it. Like I see a lot of websites lately I'm so impressed with because they're scholars. Mm-hmm. They're absolutely, they're professors of whatever, assistant mm-hmm. professors, postdocs. The first level is not, I'm an assistant professor at the University of X. It's much softer entry with tabs that say my writing, my speaking, my, mm-hmm. you know, areas of interest or media contacts. And folks, if you are a scholar working on anything that remotely might intersect with the current moment, and by that I don't mean like what we see right now is the current moment, but what you can imagine comes up, what you, in looking at your stuff, say, boy, this really talks to this. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you have a tab on your website that's either called press or media or contact that says, I am available for press interviews on these topics and mm-hmm. how to reach you.
Mm.
because it matters. Your citation of your work for a lot of universities matter. Mm-hmm. And your visibility matters mm-hmm. because you raise the visibility of the university that you're mm-hmm. at.
It's true.
So just wanted to remind people.
Yeah.
Have a press time.
I mean, our extremely literal listeners are going to say, well, that's not going to count for tenure, though, is it? And, you know, it might not. It won't count the same as the peer-reviewed journal article in the top-tier journal of your field, no. But it will count in some ways, and it will enrich your academic or your career, however you want to define it, in other ways. So in other words, make yourself available for those kinds of press encounters as you're also developing your writing for, you know, for the academic career.
And I would argue that if you are not junior, if you are tenured, or you are close to being tenured, or you are senior and you are thinking of moving, cited, where you're cited, mm-hmm. How visible you are does matter, mm-hmm. right? I had somebody the other day doing a job talk for coming in tenured, a senior position, and one of the parts that they wanted on the job talk is, where is your work cited? And how mm-hmm. is it, how are people using it? Mm-hmm. So I think that I know that doesn't sound the same as I'm available to speak mm-hmm. to the New York Times, but it does in the land of raising the profile of a university coming mm-hmm. in as a chair or something mm-hmm. like that, being able to point to the 15 times you were quoted across media over mm-hmm. the last year about
right.
hurricanes mm-hmm. matters.
Yeah.
And it matters on grants.
Yeah, it does.
So
absolutely,
just saying, have one of those tabs. Mm-hmm. Have a way for people to contact you.
And I mean, to be fair, some institutions have rubric in their tenure cases for community outreach and mm-hmm. public engagement. And not all do, but some do. But in any case, it's just, it's very, you know, I would take the longer view, which is that the humanities would have a lot more impact and scholarly pursuits would have a lot more impact on public policy if we weren't kind of hiding behind the walls of the ivory tower so much. I think we do have a lot of difficulty speaking to the public, and I would love to see that change.
So I'm going to go with that I'm going to go back to that on websites. So we of course think you should have a website, and we think you should have a well-designed website. And it's very easy to have a well-designed website because you can buy one of those out of the box hosting mm-hmm. platforms where you just get to drag and drop to set it up. The thing that I just want to encourage you to do as you're setting up your website is think about, I'm going to give you one of those words. It's going to give you a little bit of hives. Think about the stakeholders that you are trying to interact with. So rather than having a single set of eyes that you're speaking to on your website, like instead of it's that future tenure track job, think about yourself fully as that you want to operate in, right? So maybe the tenure track job isn't coming, but there are all these other things you can do. So who are the people who are going to be looking at your website and potentially interacting with you, mm-hmm. both to write to you, be in the, you know, to about how they were affected by your work, mm-hmm. by contacting you to speak on their podcast, by looking at whether they think you're going to be a good fit for their university or their department or their program or their company. Mm-hmm. So think about the different sets of eyes that you want to speak to. Don't think about everybody who's looking at it and freak out about it. I mean, who do you want to be talking to? To
right.
whom do you want to be talking?
Right. That's true. Now, I'm interested to know what you think. I'm often asked about this website issue. What if I am trying for tenure track jobs, but also at the same time looking at non-academic jobs because I'm realistic mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I know that chances are I'm going to be applying for jobs at NGOs or, you know, charitable organizations or federal government. So how do I make a website that speaks to both of those? And I think you just kind of indicated that you could have a tab that gives your kind of your CV and your scholarly profile, that scholarly biography that only talks about CV categories like where you did your PhD and how you got the Fulbright and, you know, where you have two publications in the Journal of X and the Journal of Y. But then you could also have another tab that tells a different bio.
Yeah.
Or,
I mean, I think
how would you do it?
Well, first of all, because I think that, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. I would go look at people who are where I want to be mm-hmm. and start building a website and a conversation that would match it. So I think about the websites of the scholars I know whose books are already published, who are out there, and what, how are they telling their story about who they are? Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt that if you were to go to a lot of the sort of the big books that have come out over the last several years, you will find that Tressie McMillan Cottom, it says she's a professor somewhere, but she's a scholar of particular things, and it and her website undoubtedly looks at all those things and what she does. If you look at Chanda Prescott Weinstein, I think, and the new book that she just came out, her Cosmos book,
Disordered Cosmos.
If you go to her website, it's clear that that what she does, but it's also just the whole picture,
right? So you're engaged with a person, not with a professor,
right? Right. Or, and so I would say
with a not with a PhD per se.
So there may be, especially when you're more junior and your book's not out yet, you may have a way for somebody to download or click to your CV. And certainly as you're starting out as a graduate student, your website may be, this is who I am, and these are the places I've been, you know, the places I've been published and the things I'm working on. What I'm saying is you're constantly massaging it to reflect where you're headed and rather than where you are. Right? Yeah. So you're just trying to, you know, act like you've been there before. So you just want to keep creating a thing that reflects the fullness of what you have to offer. And that's the true, whether you just wrote the new book that everybody's talking about, or you're planning to write the new book that everybody's talking about. How do you want to present yourself for that full picture? And I think that's, every person's different. You know, I can't remember who it was the other day, their website, there was their book and all their academic stuff, but there was a whole other section on their hiking and all the photos of their backpacking and hiking. And I was like, that, I'd love to see more of that.
Yeah.
Like, hear of me in my whole humanity instead of just the article I published.
So. I agree. All right. Well, I think we've covered a lot of the, both the strategy and the tactics of self-promotion, except for LinkedIn.
And everybody, speaking of making people shudder and run the other way, we've talked about it on the podcast before.
We have. I want to have a LinkedIn specialist come on and talk us through it. I think that's going to be a cool thing to do. I see it shifting quickly that more and more academics are using LinkedIn, and it's becoming more of an academic space and less corporatized. I mean, it's always going to be corporatized. It's for the, but it's becoming, there's much more of a critical mass of academics on it doing their academic kind of stuff. So,
Well, they,
don't be afraid of it.
Absolutely not. And in fact, I have someone we can invite on. So we'll just get that organized pretty soon. And we're going to walk you through step by step how to do LinkedIn. But the most important thing about LinkedIn is to just get over yourself. Start by getting over yourself and starting a page and reading all the articles.
Right.
And there are a million of them.
A million articles on how to do it well. And the thing I always tell academics is you guys, you have the big brain. You have the trained brain. You know how to do research. You know how to read and read quickly and cross-reference information. And so apply that to learning how to do LinkedIn well. Apply that to learning how to network well, because a lot of smart people have written many smart things about some of the stuff we've talked about today. And so you can become an educated actor in this realm. It's not just, you're not just a leaf caught in the tide of life.
Absolutely. And there we have the professor's in mantra writ large. You are not a leaf caught in the tide of life. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
One last note here. This podcast is made possible every week by the exceptional work of our editor and producer, Stephanie Blair. If you happen to need audiovisual work, be sure you go check out baddieblair.com, BaddieBlair.com. And also, I encourage you to check out her phenomenal home decor and apparel designs. And you can check those out at chochochen.com, chochochen.com. As always, Stephanie Blair, we are grateful for your incredible talent. Thank you.